phone. Nothing else.
Right, but how much you spent the same amount of time on the cell phone last month as you did this month? You have to check the minutes to ensure.
No. I still do the same on my Facebook. That's it. And that's it. Sometimes I put it down. Sometimes I use it. So you mean that's it? Anyway,
it could be usage though. Take a look at the number of minutes. Compare the last two bills. Uh-huh. Look at how many minutes you had for this month and how many minutes you had for last month.
Okay, then. Thank you very much. One more question. The gentleman that called about is receiving 200 and something per month?
Yes. And 91-year-old.
I know it's hard at 91 for anyone anyway. What was he getting before he get the increase?
And he did share that last week. I did record what he said. What he was getting last week was just a little less before. It wasn't a significant increase, he said.
Yeah, but I know this is what I know from experience and seeing what would be. Once you're living alone, are you living, say, with your wife and just you and you both are at a certain age for a certain category, I'm telling you, they get the help to pay their water bill. So he should go and look about that because his water bill can be paid for him.
Okay.
You understand? But if we have more people in the house and the water bill is higher, then it's at him. They won't pay for him.
Interesting.
Because I know that for a fact because, you know, with you, I get around and I know people. Mm-hmm. They pay for you alone and you don't have anyone and you're just you alone using your water. The government do pay for that bill for him. We go to the... Oh, National Insurance, no, what do you call it, the people that you go to, you know, and then they pay the bill for him every month because I know of people who paid every month for them, at their pensioners,
yes.
You know, and it's just one or two living together. But if you've got your grandkids and your children and everybody in the house with you, there's no way they're going to pay that bill for you. But they got to prove it's you alone using that water. Okay?
Yes.
Anyway, I must give our Queen, the Prime Minister, Mia Montley, 100% mark. She's trying her best to get Barbados and her ministers to get Barbados off the blacklist and off the grey list. I never knew there was a grey list until yesterday. And we are back off everything
now. Which is the
not
so bad list. Huh? The blacklist is a very bad list, and the grey list is the not so bad list.
Yeah.
Where you just need to fix a few things. And then you go off the list.
And I am pleased and I'm happy. Mm-hmm. She's doing what she got to do. But the only thing I would like her to do for me is to let the ministers come and take question of the work they're doing. And let the public know because a lot of roads have been fixed. Quite a lot of roads. Over 100 roads have been fixed. And 2.4 million paid back in tax return. University fee are there. The children are back in university studying free. Mm-hmm. And thank God for that. She's worked from the day one. She's working round the clock. I wonder if she sleeps, you know, and her ministers, they are working round the clock. My minister, Mr. Kerry Simmons, hardly in the Highland, is all over the world trying to bring in tourism. And that's what I don't mind. Once he's doing that, I am happy. But each one should have, once a month to come and let the public question them, like, what's going on, what you're doing for your community, what you're doing, you know, how things are going. We need to hear from the ministers, not just Ms. Montley alone. Because I think she's a queen anyway, okay? So thank you very much. Okay,
thank
bye-bye.
Thank you so much. That's an interesting perspective in terms of improving communication. Many people are saying that they're hearing the Prime Minister and they're not hearing ministers. So maybe there could be consideration for... I know I've seen in the press a lot, quite a bit of ministers have spoken on X, Y, Z, but what Ms. P seems to be asking for is a specific... Winnie, a specific type setup where the public can come and hear the engagement or the questions and answers on specific things. And there have been a number of town hall meetings where respective ministries headed by the ministers have spoken up to last night. We had two ministers speak on the new facility at Spikestown, or the proposed facility, just to hear the perspectives of the people, and that was the MP for the city, the Honourable Colin Jordan, and then the Acting Minister of Tourism and the Substantive Minister of Maritime Affairs, the Honourable Kirk Humphrey, last night at Alexandra School, where they spoke to the proposed new facility that will be at Spikestown. I got the feedback from a range of persons within not just the tourism sector, but those the persons who live and have only lived in Spikestown, and then we got feedback from other businesses and other persons in the community. So there are moments when you have ministers speaking, but what I'm hearing you say is that there probably should be a different type of engagement, like how we have in some countries post-cabinet briefings, where the press can come or the public can come and ask a few questions, etc. So that's a good suggestion. This is Dr. Brassatz.
Good morning, Lisa.
Hi, good morning.
All right. My concern today is with the online payment, VAT payments for offer, the VAT payments on online transactions.
Mm-hmm.
I find that this payment is similar to the NSRL in two ways. One is that it is collecting taxes, and secondly, it is collecting the tax up front, which is what the NSRL was doing and which caused a lot of concern. So to me, the NSRL is removed, but it is replaced by another tax working the same way. There's one little difference, though. I find that the NSRL, to me, targeted big businesses more and affected big businesses more than small businesses. But this VAT payment on online transactions is affecting small businesses more than big businesses. So we remove it, we could put it back, but we're just affecting two different categories of people. What is your point of view or your opinion about the online tax?
I heard that the online tax was coming for quite some time. I know that there was not the operationalization of it, or it wasn't properly done, or it was spoken about when nothing happened at the time. And the plan was to broaden the tax net because there are a number of persons who were getting by without having to pay anything. As we know, right, value-added tax is a progressive tax, and therefore it would capture those persons who play businesses who are not on the or within the threshold. So if you go to the supermarket and other places outside of running your business, you're still expected to pay value-added tax. In this instance, persons were able to purchase things like, let's say, for example, I want a pair of sneakers, I can't find them in Keith Shepherd or certain places, I go online and I buy them, and I pay the tax in the U.S., but I don't pay the local tax because
right,
I can just, you know, ship them through, get them at the post office and pay a dollar. Now,
right,
in this instance, pay $10. But there not be that attributed value-added tax on the, along with the, you know, not really freight, but what's that term?
You mean shipping?
The shipping, right. So
right,
you were getting by paying only certain taxes, the external tax and not the local tax.
Right.
Now this is really attempting to capture that. I hear you on the large versus small, where you're saying the NSRL would have addressed larger businesses and not smaller businesses.
Right.
I think it's a little different in the sense that anyone who purchases anything pays value-added tax. The persons who were not paying were the smaller businesses. So it's not like if we say, oh, let's catch the small businesses because they have a free window. I think what government
right,
is really trying to do is to up the ante as it relates to revenue leakage.
Right.
And you would appreciate that there has been significant revenue leakage simply because there was not the wide tentacles. If you open your full hand, all 10 fingers, and capture, like if you're lifting up sand,
right,
quite a bit was dropping out of your hand because you had too many loopholes and they're trying to fill some of those spaces from what I'm seeing, and this tax is one of them.
But I don't see how it would capture the taxes, though, because...
When you say it would, how it wouldn't capture taxes, so let's say the same pair of sneakers, I purchased the pair of sneakers.
Right.
And I have to identify where the sneakers are going. Are they coming to Barbados? Are they going to Fort Lauderdale or somewhere in Ontario? Whoever I'm sending them to.
Right.
You're saying that it's not going to capture the taxes, if what?
Okay,
In the past, I could have sent them to someone.
Right.
And not have to pay the tax. But at the point of purchase.
Right.
With a Barbados origin, I think you have to pay the applicable tax.
Well, it depends on who was paying tax, because everybody didn't have to pay a tax, right?
Mm-hmm.
Only some people had to pay taxes.
Meaning?
Okay. An individual in a household, a small house owner or whatever, or school leaver, could have bought something overseas online, didn't pay a tax.
But we didn't pay Barbados tax, but we paid whatever was, well, shipping and whatever else was applicable in that country.
Right. And I think that still obtains. That's not discontinuing.
Mm-hmm.
But with the VAT to Barbados, such a person didn't pay VAT. They pay taxes, but not VAT.
Mm-hmm.
Now I think they will still pay the taxes, but they will also pay the VAT.
Yeah, the VAT
but
is
what
the
it is doing to me, it is going to force that kind of small person to come back home and purchase the sneakers or whatever from say a big business who would not really be paying that tax, because they are not going to use a credit card to bring in the shoes necessarily. Because if you're bringing in 5 or 10 containers, I suppose you're not going to use a credit card. You got to find another means of bringing in the goods.
Mm-hmm. Go through the central bank and make the purchase.
Right. So you're going to force these people who are getting through, these small people now, to go into the hands of the big people. Because if you're going to pay a VAT online, you would best to buy the shoes locally.
Mm-hmm.
But that's one point. The other point, though, is that it really is adding a cost to business for small businesses. Simply because, as you would know, small businesses were exempted from paying VAT. Especially particularly if you're a manufacturing concern,
mm-hmm.
you were exempted from paying VAT. No, small businesses usually do online transactions to purchase materials, like say $5,000 or $10,000. You would easily use your credit card. It saves time going to the bank and so purchase the raw materials and bring them in. You get exemptions on them, so you never were paying the VAT in the first place. No, if you purchase $10,000,
this is for manufacturing purposes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So manufacturers know are being affected, because a manufacturer purchasing $10,000 in say equipment or materials,
mm-hmm.
for $10,000 you don't have to pay $1,750.
But if you are a bona fide manufacturer and you have received your exemption letter. And that becomes, I think that you still have the same manufacturing facility where if government knows that you are a bona fide manufacturer and you have all your details, et cetera, there would be still that exemption.
You're assuming that, or you know that?
I'm assuming that, because I'm saying if you fall in a particular category and these parameters are what you have to work within and these are your concessions, the concession is applicable where you operate.
I see the letter, right, that came out saying that Amazon write you and tell you.
That's different. You mean the Amazon, the AMS, the one yes. is.
Yes, because you know you purchase your material. You may purchase the computers for work via machines, or you mm-hmm. purchase your machines from through Amazon.
Yeah.
So Amazon is going to demand the 17.5%.
And then pay into the government of Barbados.
And which you do not currently do. Right now, as a manufacturer, you can go and purchase, say, 2 or 3 computers. You could purchase machines and so on from Amazon, and you do not have to pay that VAT. So
But you know, it was always applicable. It just wasn't effected or operationalized before because they didn't work out all of the kinks to make it happen.
I know, but I say it was bad. Then I was glad it didn't work.
Okay.
But now that it is working from April, I am saying that it is in a strange business now because business is already competitive.
Mm-hmm.
Profit margins low. I know you have to either absorb that extra cost or you got to put it on to the consumer. If you put it on the consumer, now you could push yourself out of business. So it is not helpful to a small business person.
I understand that there's in excess of $50 million in VAT revenues that have been leaking out based on what government had done in terms of, analyzing the data.
But this ain't going to stop that leak. This ain't going to stop that particular leak. The leak can still continue.
No, but if you look at the transaction, the online transactions over, let's say, a two-year period, you are talking about one small person purchasing a pair of shoes, or you're talking about the business person who has to buy the $10,000.
Let me look at the business person.
Right. So when government would have looked at the data, it would have encompassed the larger person doing the purchase or the transaction and the smaller purchase. The smaller person may very well be 3% of that $50 million. It probably just means that they will have to adjust their practices, but it really needs to capture the leakage. That leakage I showed you the perspective of the sand being going through the spaces of the fingers.
Okay. But that is why NSRL was introduced, you know. Because if you paid up front, there was no leakage.
No, the two are different.
They're two different taxes. Yes, the concepts are the same. In other words, you could have asked people to pay the VAT up front. That's what they're actually doing now. They're finally going to do that. Pay the VAT up front instead of behind. And you're not going to get any leakage because you get your money before the people get the articles. Right? And that was condemned. They were saying, no, that's not a good way. But now going back to it and saying it's actually an excellent way. For me, a small business person, it is better to go into the bank now and do the transfer to get away from the online card transaction because then you don't have to pay that 70.5%. Right? But the problem is now it doesn't make it easy to do business because one of the objectives of the government was to ease the way we do business. And now it's going to make it tough.
Make it tough by what? Because there's a tax that was always applicable that has now become operationalized?
No. That tax was not always applicable. That was
value-added tax is on goods and services that do not fall into the basket or that are not exempt or where there's the non-vatable. Those are the only things that were not supposed to receive the value-added.
But those are the things I'm talking about because it was...
No.
Manufacturers do not pay VAT.
And I'm telling you, I'm also sure, let me say I'm 89% certain
that
if an item is non-vatable, it will not attribute or attract a value-added tax on it. Simple.
But you do not know that for sure.
But in 2019, when the frequently asked questions were shared and Ambassador Passod, when he came to the public and talked about this online tax that was coming, he had to answer several questions. And one of them was the question about what about the non-VAT items? And I remember the response being that the Barbados Revenue Authority would have worked with the respective reference numbers, the electronic registers, and those persons who we will be purchasing through. Let's use Amazon as one of the examples. And Amazon would know what is vatable and what is not vatable based on the relationship between Barbados and Amazon.
But no. There's a little misunderstanding here.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking about vatable items because Amazon, could look at the item that is vatable and not
right,
vatable.
But you're saying that the manufacturer or the person who's buying something that should not attribute VAT will get VAT on it. And I'm telling you, no. And you asked me how I know, and I told you through the frequently asked questions.
But Amazon would not have information about me. They've got information about product.
Right. And if you purchase a product that is vatable, you will pay VAT.
Understand what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
If an item is vatable.
Yes.
If an item is vatable.
Mm-hmm.
And I purchase it automatically is no longer valuable.
Right, but
You're exempted.
But right, but I'm saying...
It's not the item, it is me.
But you would be the...
Not the item.
And you are a manufacturer?
I'm a manufacturer. Right. I am exempted from paying VAT on a machine. So I want to buy a drilling machine. Now, the machine itself is valuable.
Right.
But not me.
Right. And you're suggesting, let us be getting there. We're warm.
Yes.
That if you purchase it and you are John Brown.
Yes.
And you purchase it through Amazon.
Yes.
That you shouldn't pay a VAT on it because you're a manufacturer. I, Lisa Gale, right. Should pay a VAT because...
Yes.
I am not a manufacturer. And I think that, because I say 89%, that the communication between those persons who are manufacturers to government should still remain. And therefore, if you had to pay up front, let's use the example as having to pay and then be refunded your VAT because you're not. That is another reality, just like how it happens now.
But that ain't easy of doing business at all. That ain't easy of doing business.
It may impact on the ease of doing business as you've shared. And that's a valid point.
Right?
That's a very valid point.
I believe in the long run, yes, they may have to do it that way, but it's not a good way because sometimes you don't get your money, period.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, thanks very much.
Thank you as well. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Down to Brass Tacks, good morning.
Mrs. Gale?
Hi, good morning.
How are you?
Doing well, thanks.
I want to talk about covenants and rainbows.
Covenants and rainbows?
Yes. That's a good combination. Mm-hmm. A covenant is a legal term which is found in contracts such as land deeds and other legal documents.
Yes.
And it's a commitment by one party to another party to fulfill something. If that is not fully satisfied, there's a breach of that covenant, and usually there is some penalty by the party that commits the breach. Mm-hmm. Is that good?
Yes.
That's correct?
Yes, you're telling me, and that's what I know so far.
Right, good. All right, now rainbows.
Mm-hmm.
Rainbows are beautiful. They said to say that rainbows are formed by an arc of multicolors, which is formed opposite the sun by the refraction of the sun's rays in raindrops, spray on me. And every time I see a rainbow, I remember the promise God made with man about the earth, that he would never flood the earth, entire earth again. And that is a covenant. So that's the rainbows and the covenant. Okay. And God keeps his covenant. He called his covenant an everlasting covenant.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, what is the significance of covenants and rainbows? The gay community, they've selected the rainbow as their signet. Now, this is a really powerful signet, an everlasting covenant. And they've done it so well that whenever you see the rainbow colors, at least for me, you think of the gay community. Do you have that experience?
No, I don't.
No, when you see the rainbow colors?
When I see the rainbow colors, I always remember the covenant that God
made. I remember the covenant. Yeah. I remember the covenant as well, but I also think of the gay community. Can I read a quote?
Of what you think or what you have heard before? Are you sure? Go ahead.
No, what I've read. A quotation. Can I read a quotation?
Sure, go ahead.
All right. It says, even their women exchange natural relations for unnatural ones.
Is a quote or is a verse?
It's a quotation from the Bible.
Oh, let's say that. That's why I asked you just now if it's... Go ahead.
Okay. Even their women exchange natural relations for unnatural ones.
That's from Romans?
In the same... Women.
That's from Romans?
In the same way... Yes.
Okay.
In the same way... Mm-hmm. The men also abandoned natural relations with women and were inflamed with lust for one another. Men committed indecent acts with other men and received in themselves the due penalty for their error.
Mm-hmm.
Close quotation.
Yeah.
Now, the gay community have selected such a powerful signet, which is an everlasting covenant. And I think each time it is shown, God's word stands and his judgment are always true.
Okay. Genesis talks about the rainbow being a sign of the covenant between me and the earth.
Yes.
So as you said, it's a covenant between God and the earth. Mm-hmm.
God and the earth and man. And if someone decides that he can fly and he goes on the top of a building and jumps off, when he jumps,
mm-hmm.
the law of gravity will kick in.
Mm-hmm.
And no person has to do anything to that person. They will fall to the ground. And his actions will have a natural consequence.
Yeah.
even though that is so, there's hope in God. God says that when we seek him, we will find him. And he's constantly waiting for us to call on him. His plan is that we, mankind, will be formed into his image. Mm-hmm. And that is open to any and everyone. There's no distinction.
Good point.
That's my contribution.
Good contribution. Thank you so much for sharing. This is Dr. Brastax.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Greetings, Lisa.
Greetings, sir.
Good morning to John Stowe and the listeners. Greetings to all.
John Stowe, our technical operator and producer.
Yes, ma'am. Yes. It is interesting that my contribution is coming right after the lady one, because my contribution too is from a religious perspective. On Tuesday morning, one of the callers, first call, a passionate guy who do not like to see his fellow man treated unfairly. Mm-hmm. And he asked the question, why do people treat each other like that? But I just made a brief comment on Tuesday morning. So I would just like to just elaborate a little bit. As I said Tuesday, it is inherited sin that we inherited through the act of a disobedience. And that is found in the Bible and in Genesis account. When God gave Adam the command at Genesis chapter 2, verse 16, Jehovah God also gave this command to the man. From every tree of the garden you may eat the satisfaction, but as for the tree of the knowledge of good and bad, you must not eat from it. On the day you eat from it, you will certainly die. Now, many people might say, well, that's just a story about a snake and an apple or fruit, you know, but they fail to understand that three very important points came up with that. Disobedience, stealing, and greediness, which has followed mankind down through centuries, even to our day. Now, I would just like to give a brief illustration, ma'am. Just imagine that, as the listeners, just imagine that you invited some guests into your home, and you give them access to the refrigerator, all the food in the refrigerator, and the cupboards. And you take them to a drawer and tell them, no, you see this drawer here? Do not interfere with this. And do not eat my Eclipse or my sardines. And when you come back home, you found that they have eaten your produce. But then you put them out your home? A matter of fact, they were disobedient, they stole from you, and they were greedy. And that is the flaw, as Mr. Johnson, because Mr. Johnson was your moderator that morning, say it is greediness and a flaw in mankind, which is sin. And it doesn't matter who we are, where we live, what color we are, if we are Christian, Jew, Muslim, Rastafarian, if we are prime minister, doctor, police, don't care who we are, we have that flaw. And it will come to end. Yeah, as I read before, it will come to end, because Jehovah God is going to bring it to end. But we just have to put faith in the Creator, because he allow it, and he will change it. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you, sir, for sharing your thoughts with us. This is Dr. Brastax.
Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning to you. The two things we're going to discuss this morning, right? They say that Barbados is the 12th most expensive place to live, right? Mm-hmm. And we are loaded with taxes, and there's nothing that we can do about it, right? And there's some people who are working for money that barely making ends meet. I listened to that man who's 90-something years old, and he said he's getting to something a week, right? Mm-hmm. I know of an old lady, when one morning she had bills, and she was going to drop them in the box in the old National Insurance building, and I assisted her and took her up to the welfare department and handing the bills, and then she went inside and talked to them and stuff. And on her way out, she came out with some groceries. I don't know if they had groceries there or what, but she had a package that they gave her, right? So this old man can, if he realize that the bills are more than what he's getting, he can actually ask for welfare assistance, or he can go to the Waterworks Authority and get the $46.50 taken off his account if he's living alone, and he will get $46.50 more to spend on food, because, you know, the bills, his bills, he barely covering, right? So I really sympathize with that gentleman, but the welfare will probably give him an LPO, and he can go and buy some food from the supermarket, whatever, or they might give him a check, so he can check the welfare department for any assistance that he's falling down in, and if they find out that he's getting a challenge, they will look at his means and assist him, so he don't have a problem there, right? In relation to the entrepreneurs, they're trying to push entrepreneurship in Barbados, right? And as you are being unemployed and you're trying to do a little business and you want to make little earrings and they ain't got enough material here and you got to order it to buy these things, then you got to pay a duty and you got to pay this VAT and all sorts of things. All you got to do is add on the cost to the stuff and hope that people buy it. And if they don't buy it, you forget about that and go there and see if you can find a job or something like that. Because black businesses ain't going to survive. The small businesses ain't going to survive. You understand? Because I remember they had to shut small shops and the supermarkets closed the small shops to shut down. You know, and people get frustrated when they're trying a little something and they ain't working on it. Got to feed the families to go there and they work for buttons, you know. And everybody unfortunate to carry home a 10,000 or 7,000 or 6,000 when the month comes, right? Some people scrambling with the $200 a week and stuff. So if you got to go there and try a little entrepreneurship and it ain't working out, forget about that, full stop. The government will then have to maintain your true welfare. So I don't see nothing wrong that. If it ain't working out, just go to welfare. And at some point in time, the welfare can still give you something to survive on. So if it gets tough, just go to welfare. I don't see what's the big problem.
Yeah, some people, I think this is the second time someone mentioned the possibility of offsetting some of the costs at the age of, you know, pensioner. In specific reference to the 91-year-old gentleman that called. I'm hoping that he's still listening because he can seek some assistance where some assistance will be granted. So thank you for sharing that. And then you also raised the point about how businesses on a daily basis, they have to pass on the costs because implicit in their specific line item or the unit cost that they had originally anticipated was one or let's say X, and then some other variable costs came in. And they then had to subsume some of that in the final price for the customer. And that's what you do, along with your markup, making sure that it is allowing you to continue businesses, because you will have some variable costs, you will have some fixed costs. And as a business, you have to determine, you know, how you keep down the variable costs. And if when you do get the variable costs, how do you work with that vis-a-vis the outcome or the price, the end price. So that's a good point, and I'm sure many businesses do that today.
Yeah, because the operation cost is very high, because I can tell you, right, it ain't no mean sport having to pay light water, telephone for a business, whether it is profitable or non-profitable, because at the end of the day, when the money is distributed to you, when you get, say, for example, if you get your quarterly allocation and you get the money, you know, sometimes you've got to try to balance this, and sometimes you've got to go and get a supplemental because the things are increasing. That's in government system, right? And in private, the same thing applies. As soon as things are increased, you know, it makes things worse for you. And sometimes as a private investor, sometimes you got to step out and you got to go and look elsewhere to set up your business and stuff. So these small people who are trying the best to do the little business and they realize they ain't working, you just got to forget about it, shut your shop and down. That my grandmother had a shop and she had to shut it down because the supermarket forced her to close down. The only time she could have made money is on a Sunday and on when the supermarket shut, and a little trust. When people come and trust, she got to trust them because she know that the people ain't got no money and she can trust them. Some going to pay and some ain't going to pay because the supermarkets, the merchants can get the supermarkets most of the stuff because you can get a little small set, and the supermarkets can send, the merchants can send things to you that the supermarkets ain't going to want, you know. So these were all the challenges the little one-door shops had in that time, right? So that's why you see a lot of people don't like to go into business because of lots of stress. My father was in business too, and the operation cost wasn't easy. So we realized that dealing with mahogany, making mahogany chairs and rattan, I think we had to come out of that business for a stop and call it that. The rest is, so it wasn't easy. I grew up in business, you know, it's like it ain't easy at all. That's all I got to say.
Thanks so much for sharing. Even as you mentioned, the wrought iron and the mahogany, these two things that last so long. I'm sure there are some people who've passed through so many other chairs since their wrought iron and their mahogany. And unfortunately, the newer type things are not as lasting as those two that you just mentioned. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Down to Brass Tacks, you're listening to your phone or you're listening to the radio. You're on the air.
Good morning, Miss Gail.
Good morning.
How are you today, ma'am?
Doing well, thanks.
Okay. Now, I didn't hear the old gentleman. I stepped outside there, and I would have missed the old gentleman call, et cetera. But there used to be an old gentleman. He was 90-something years old.
Yeah.
He used to call regular, and he always would say he went wrong in the days of Mr. Adams and helped the poor people, et cetera. I wonder what has become of him.
This is not greetings and salutations.
No.
Okay.
This gentleman, you used to see 93 or 90-something back then.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There's 2 years ago, he was fairly popular.
He called more often, yes, 2 years ago.
Right. I hope he's okay. Now,
okay.
My main point this morning, I'll touch on it quickly, but I just want to touch on a couple of things before I get on that. The discussion there just now about the taxes, et cetera. Interesting discussion. My take on this is, and I've been calling for things over time, relentless in this call. I am saying that the government and all the other facilities has an obligation to protect the poor and the vulnerable. Now, that discussion, what would emanate of that about taxes, etc., government should put a task force into place to make sure that, I've been saying this for some time, that prices are kept down commensurate to wages. Because I remember back then in the 80s, they made the point that if you allow wages to go up and then cost of living to go up, wages go up, you're back at square one. So what you've got to do, prices go up, wages go up, and you keep cost of living under a kind of control that it will keep a kind of balancing out. But if you allow it to go up alongside, you can stop. Any kind of discussion. I don't know if you see what the point I'm trying to make.
You go ahead, you continue.
Right. The thing is that for some time now, there's a concern in Barbados about prices, VAT, and prices, and the ridiculous situation as regarding prices. And we had prime ministers and persons and authority testify and attest to price gouging, etc. We've heard this over the years. And I was around long. I've been calling the program now this 37 years. You know how many times they spoke about cost of living and prices and social issues? I'm a social commentator. That's a fact. And I'm relentless. And I don't renege. And I'm consistent, though. So I'm
relentless,
saying...
renege, consistent.
Pardon me?
I like your choice of words. Relentless, renege, and consistent.
I'm wrong. Look, ma'am, let me proceed. Look. quick one, I can give you a little nudge here. No, you said you were 89% sterling. You could have said 90 in there. Sorry.
So why do people in the supermarket give you the price at $199? Why they don't just say $200?
That's the thing. You've got it.
Well, they have to say $200 now because we don't have sites.
No, you're still here.
They still have it. They still have the 99.
Yeah, you're right.
Oh,
yeah, it's good for a little humor in the whole presentation. Now, millions.
But just on your response,
okay.
There was a cost of living committee under the auspices of the Ministry of Commerce.
How vigilant is it?
No, it isn't. It is a little defunct.
You see what I'm saying?
And they were working towards. But at the time, you know, there was the financial crisis, and there were other things that started to preoccupy the minds of the persons on that committee. But there could be a resuscitation of the committee.
You need it more than ever.
With some new players.
You need it more than ever. And there are a host of persons. Look, we are in a kind of situation where you have the people in the monetary persons in. We are in the IMF program, as it were. So you got to guard against every cent that is used and make sure it's spent properly, etc. I am saying that needs resuscitating. And let a place some vigilance and offset a lot of the concerns of some of these persons that are calling. So if we can get that up and running again, that would be a clarion call made now in regard to that.
The only thing is that whilst the committee, or with the resuscitation of such a committee, then there has to be the PR on it. And is it always good to just justify that prices will be high in certain high-cost destinations?
You see, ultimately, the real crux of this matter is, it is said to me all the time that market forces dictate how prices go, etc. I agree, but we are of a disposition in this side of town that we do not unify and fortify each other in regard to, we are not going to buy it unless it is more compatible with our pocket, etc. We in this side of town don't do that. In Canada, you understand that it is readily done. And certain other parts. But in this side of town, you know, we anything that's thrust upon us, we accept like a lamb to the slaughter, you see?
Okay.
Right. Now, all right. Millions down the drain is of a concern to me. I am saying that millions down the drain, this is the water situation here a couple of days ago in Christchurch, where they found that burst main, et cetera, et cetera. All I'm trying to say is, it was in a kind of area hidden, etc. But my strong take on this is that you've got persons who spent. Let me rephrase what I'm going to say here. If there was a gentleman that came on the call and heard him about twice, saying he spent over 40 something, nearly 50 years in the water authority, and he could outline. He said the person would call him sometimes and say, "Rip these pipes, going along and whatever." I am strongly of the view that these persons should be retained.
As consultants. I agree with you, Ron.
I can't for the life of me.
Or even as, one of the things, and I was very pleased yesterday when I heard Minister Humphrey and both him and the and Minister Jordan, Colin Jordan, they both said something very simple. We want to hear from the people of Spikestown who are intricately involved, who are knowledgeable, who've lived in these places for so long. And can give, not just anecdotal, but can give feedback and information, annotated, I dare say, information that would be useful for further decision-making. So in other words, they're not coming in with a fait accompli and saying, okay, this is it, and you all have to accept that this is what we want to do in Spice. So we want to hear from the people who know. And I'm saying there are persons who know, who can approach. I don't know if the gentleman just calling in and then go to the Barbados Water Authority is not sufficient. He needs to go present himself and share his ideas, his perspectives. But I hear you, and I heard about this gentleman as well.
Yeah, he said,
and with the types of water woes that we have been facing for so long, we do need that extra assistance.
I'm contending
So let us make the call yourself and myself, Mr. Rawl.
Right. So
we are making the call for that gentleman to come forward, make himself known to the Barbados Water Authority with the institutional knowledge that he has, with the technical know-how that he has, and share it with that organization because that organization needs it.
Point taken. We unify in this one. I regard you, ma'am.
Thank you so much. Dr. Brastax.